Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
You're unbelievable.
You're unbelievable.
What's up, everybody? We were just practicing.
That was real. That happened.
Welcome to the podcast, the Command Zone podcast, to be specific. You are watching / listening, maybe on YouTube, maybe in your podcast app. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai.
And if you didn't get the thingy, the gist.
The memo.
It's untime.
Yes, it is what are we calling it? Uncelebration.
Uncelebration. It's an unholiday season.
So silver bordered cards are legal until January 15th. You know, this has created an interesting thing where a lot of people want to play the silver bordered cards, especially the unstable cards.
Yes. Because there are some cards that are great commanders.
But we don't have a lot of our regular tools available to us, like EDH Rec.
Yeah, Donald.
So Donald Miner went on Reddit and Twitter and some other places and basically said, like, he wanted to put the stuff into EDH Rec, but there's not really an easy and fast way to do it. There's not a lot of data out there like there is for regular commanders.
Right.
And by the time he figured it all out, it probably would be too late and they wouldn't be legal anymore, just for a lot of reasons, and it totally makes sense. Like, I'm not on Donald's case at all.
I
would do exactly what he's doing. But
he has, what, like 3 weeks to compile data?
And then it will only be used for 2 weeks and then it'll be gone. So basically, all this new craziness with silver bordered cards and commander is just not represented well online at the moment. And that gives us an opportunity because we're kind of in this exciting space where it's tough to net deck this stuff.
Yeah. An opportunity, if you want to pronounce it correctly. EDH Rec draws from every existing database that it can to compile data and do all the statistical stuff. And right now, like, I don't know, there's probably like 50 people that have made decks on Tapped Out, I would assume, for these cards.
Yeah, there's not that many. There might be more now, and maybe Donald, he said that if there was an easy way, he would do it, so he could prove us wrong and change his mind. But at the moment, there's just not a lot of information. So what we're going to do today is we're going to talk about Baron Von Count, Griselda, and X. We can't talk about all the new legendaries. And we're going to not do full deck techs on them, but Jimmy and I sort of separately wrote down our own ideas about what would be good maybe in these decks, just stuff that came to our mind. I actually used what I call the brain trust on Twitter and asked a bunch of people there and just throw out some ideas and have a discussion about the direction we might take these decks. But first, before we get into all that, we need to talk about our awesome sponsors.
That's right. Kingdom. What?
Oh, I was going to say, those cards, Baron Von Count, Griselda,
oh, yeah.
X, like, if you want to get a hold of them, especially after this episode, and build those decks, best place to go
is cardkingdom.com/commandzone. You can also get foil versions of them, which is what I would be buying if I was going to build this commander.
Of course you would.
Even if it's only legal till January 15th.
I would assume that the foils and stuff are not super expensive because Unstable is just not, like, you can't use those cards anywhere else. So I'm thinking they're probably pretty cheap. You know, Unstable is also a ton of fun to draft. If you haven't watched the new Game Nights where we drafted with Mark Rosewater, you should check it out. Also drafted with a bunch of people recently.
Yeah.
I got to Ultimate Urza. That
really?
Was sweet.
Oh my gosh, what'd you get?
I got the Ralzeric flip 5 coins and get as many extra turns as come up heads. By the way,
many?
I only got one extra turn but I still won on that extra turn, so it was fine.
Oh, that's nice. I mean, usually when you Ultimate the Planeswalker, you're about to win anyway.
Yeah, exactly. So if you use that affiliate link, again, cardkingdom.com/commandzone, Unstable products. There's holiday gifts you want to buy for family and friends. Iconic Masters, which is another great draft set and has a bunch of commander stuff, is still out. So we'd encourage you to support the show and Game Nights by using that affiliate link.
Our other sponsor for the show is Ultra Pro. Ultra Pro obviously makes a ton of Magic the Gathering equipment, including playmats, dice, sleeves, and everything else around the sun for your Urza Planeswalker card. They recently did a ton of stuff for Iconic Masters, as well as some playmats for Unstable. So, you know, if you're anywhere in the world at an LGS or maybe at Card Kingdom, go ahead and buy some Ultra Pro product to also support the show.
You know, we've had some people tweeting at us, the Wayne England, the sketch that he did for Very Cryptic Command, some of the stuff that they've been buying. And again, all those proceeds do go towards the British Heart Foundation. So that's a good way to sort of share in the holiday spirit, if you will.
Give back.
And the final way to support our show is directly at patreon.com/commandzone. In fact, we call out one lucky patron every single episode, and this episode is dedicated to Scott Paris. Scott.
Cool last name.
You rock.
Very, very rock. All right, let's move Right into it. Unstable legends. So there obviously are a lot of legends to pick from. For some reason, there are a bunch of Rakdos ones. There's like, I think three. The rest. Yeah,
because Big Idea, Griselda, and oh gosh, there's one more.
Baron Von Count.
Rakdos loves unstable, I guess.
Yeah, certainly.
So we chose these three. Sorry, we couldn't, again, do them all. It would be like a 16-hour long show. And this will probably be our only show on the Silver Border cards again, because they are only legal for, at this point, one more month.
Half a month.
So I did something, and we didn't talk about this. So the only thing Jimmy and I said was, these are the three we're going to do. Write down what you think would be cool, what interactions you come up with, and we'll talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
I sort of stayed away from other silver-bordered cards.
Me too.
Besides in the commander itself.
Yeah, I kind of wanted the deck to work with another commander should, you know, if you do end up building this, should you switch it? You're not like completely gutting yourself.
I actually was thinking that if I ever built a deck, I could probably convince people to allow me to play it if I just show them the one card.
Right.
That's the commander. I'm going to play Baron Von Count.
Mm-hmm.
Is that okay? But if they're like, well, I don't know, what other silver border cards do you have in the 99? That makes it a lot tougher sell.
Post, yeah.
And I'm talking about after January 15th. And listen, the realist, the true story here is that if you spend all the time building a deck, I don't want to just play it for 4 weeks.
Yeah, I would like for it to be usable afterwards. And maybe, I think a lot of play groups will slowly see this start to filter in, being like, oh yeah, everyone's got like, you know, three of the players in our six-player group have unstable decks. Silver border decks.
Yeah, and again, I would be okay with the statement from the rules committee that like all the legendary creatures from unstable are legal as your commander, except Spike.
Yeah, except Spike.
And we know there's Rule 13, but that just throws, which says that you have to sort of talk to your playgroup to determine how, like, the wish cycle cards or cards that refer to
a sideboard
or getting cards out of the game work. But, you know, that's just, you don't want to have that conversation constantly. I think it's just easier to just say no Spike, but I think all the rest are probably fine. And
yeah. And we covered it in the episode 2 weeks ago, 188.
Yeah, so I would hope if I built one of these decks that I would at least sometimes be able to play it. And maybe sometimes I bring it out and people are like, eh, and they're like, okay, I'll play a regular commander deck. But I think most of the time people would be cool. So that's why, yeah, I'm glad you went with the same thing, where we're not going to talk about the other interactions with silver border cards within the 99. Because our hope, I think, is that you'd be able to build this deck and have some expectation of being able to play it often in a normal play group. And I think none of this, at least that we're going to talk about today, that I came up with seems super broken. I mean, I don't know about you.
No, nothing seems that broken, because I don't think the commanders outside of Spike are insanely broken. They definitely mess with the game a lot. I think X most of all.
But it's not, we'll talk about it when we get to X, it's not that much crazier than Send Triplets or something. I think it's probably less crazy than Send Triplets.
Well, let's start talking about the commanders then.
All right, let's start with Baron Von Count.
Big shout out to Jesper Ising.
Yeah, who is the artist.
This card's awesome.
You want to read it?
Yeah, so it's one black and a red for a legendary creature, human villain. He's a 3-3, so 3 mana for a 3-3. Off to a good start. Baron Von Count enters the battlefield with a doom counter on 5. Whenever you cast a spell with the indicated numeral in its mana cost, text box, power, or toughness, move the doom counter one numeral to the left. When the doom counter moves from 1, that's the number 1, to 0, destroy target player and put that doom counter on 5. So to describe how this works, Baron Von Count comes out, there's a new counter that's created that says doom on it, and it goes from 5 to 0, or 5 to 1, sorry. Mm-hmm. And whenever you cast a spell, remember cast, not cheat into play, not from a graveyard, not from the top of your deck, and it has the number 5 in it anywhere. The number 5, the numeral. So it can't say F-I-V-E.
It can't say the word 5, yeah.
So
but it can be in the casting cost, it can be in the power and toughness, it can be in the rules text, or anywhere in the text box, basically. It can be in the flavor text.
Yep. And if you do that, then it says, oh, I checked the card. It says 5 in it. Great. Now the doom counter is at 4. And if you're able to cast 4 more spells and get that all the way to 0, you destroy a player.
Yeah, you cast something that has the number 5, then it has to have the number 4, then it has to have the number 3, 2, then 1, destroy target player.
Which I believe is something that Mara has wanted to do for a while, because I don't think there are any cards that just say destroy target player. And I know that...
Yeah, there are you win the game cards. There's like Aetherflux Reservoir, which just deals 50 damage to somebody, but doesn't technically destroy target player.
Right.
Interesting. This card is... Well, I want to talk about one interaction that I actually asked Eli Schifrin, who's the rules manager at Wizards of the Coast, about, and it's proliferate mechanic. Proliferate does not interact in any way with the doom counters. So
yeah, that would be a little too broken if that was the case.
Yeah, so the doom counters aren't actually counters in that way. They're more of a way to keep track of what number you're on. It's kind of weird. I forget exactly how Eli stated it, but the long and short of it is you can't proliferate the Doom counters.
Yeah, if you read the text, it says with a Doom counter on five. So it's almost as though it's its own dice.
Yeah.
It's a five-sided dice that says five on it. That would be a very ugly dice. I don't think it actually... Can it exist? Who knows? Imagine as the Pentagon.
I'm sure a five-sided dice can exist, but yeah. Okay, so what's the first thing you think of, like the first card or the first, you know, I don't know, anything you think of when you saw Baron Von Count?
I think the most important thing is that you should never make your deck so that you only have cards that have one of the five numbers. You should always have cards in your deck that satisfy at bare minimum three out of the five numbers. So as in, let's say you have a card like Archfiend of Ifnir, I think is the perfect card for a deck like this because it's a good card and it also has every single number on it. So Archfiend of Ifnir, if you read it, its casting cost is three black, so that's number three. It's a creature demon that says flying, whenever you cycle or discard another card, put a -1/-1 counter on each creature your opponent's control.
Now you got a one and a three.
And then its cycling cost is two.
So 1, 2, and 3.
And then its Baron Toughness is a 5/4.
There's your five and there's your four.
I think
so
you should
any
only
place
put
along
those
the way, doesn't matter where your Doom counter is at, if you cast Archfiend of Ifnir, it's going to progress it to the next one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a really important part of this commander is to sort of stack your deck with as many cards that hit multiple points on the Doom counter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because otherwise you could get stuck.
Yeah.
You don't ever want to be at a point where it's like, oh man, I just need a three and I don't have one.
Right. And you're hoping to draw one. You don't want a tutor for it. You know, I mean, Demonic Tutor is great because it's one in the black, which means you kill a player and then also get, you know, the best card out of your deck to hopefully restart the
cycle. Restart it or something. Yeah.
So there are some exceptions, obviously.
So Archfiend is a good one that has all the numbers on it. Staff of Domination also has all of them. It's cheap too. It only costs three to cast.
Mm-hmm.
Chandra, Torch of Defiance is another one that has all
the
numbers.
Right. Yeah,
Planeswalkers, I think, are often going to have multiple of the numbers just because they have that plus minus ultimate, although ultimates are usually too high. But I think there's certain mechanics that have...
Yeah, leveling up creatures are really good. Now, obviously, not all of the level up creatures are great, but like Nirkana Cutthroat, pretty sure it's got 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 because it says level 1 to 2, and then like it becomes a 4/3, and then level 3+ it becomes a 5/4, and it costs 2 in the black. So like, if you can find the right level up cards, you can 100% make a really really sweet.
Yeah, Gruul Jaw's Assassin.
Yeah,
is
that's
another
that's
one,
probably the best
because
it's
cheap.
Of a cheese one. Yeah.
Yeah,
cheap.
And it has a lot of the numbers on it. Level up. Even what's the Brimstone Mage, I think, is another one. It's just, I think, you know, level up, any mechanic that just naturally includes a bunch of numbers. And level up has numbers on the left side of the card, numbers on the right side of the card. It has a power and toughness, has a casting cost. A lot of times it makes them have abilities that have numbers. Like, level up is a really good one.
There's also a lot of Morph, Megamorph, Monstrosity, creatures that essentially have alternative at casting costs on them. So, instance, it'll have a casting cost up top, and they'll say, you can also Morph this for 3 and do this for 2 black-black or whatever.
Oh, and Megamorph says you put 2+1/+1 counters. Yeah. So, yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, so Megamorph is really good with this. Here's the thing, though. You're actively weakening your deck every time you do this because then you lose a little bit of synergy with what you're trying to do, which is hopefully go off and make enough mana so that you can kill someone in one turn. I think if you ever get the Doom counter below 3 and you pass the turn, you will indisputably be the target at the deck at the table.
Oh, true. Yeah, nobody's letting Baron Von Doom at least sit there with, you know, Doom counter at 3 going back to your turn.
Yeah.
You know, unless they're very sure you're not going to kill them, I guess.
Yeah, I think the political game with Baron Von Count is pretty funny. Because if you do secure, like, I think the best way to play Baron Von Count is have a Vedalken Orrery out, flash him out before the end of, right before your turn starts, and then have all the mana doublers in black. And you really, really want them because you need to essentially cast 5 spells if you want to do this in a single turn.
Yeah.
And that is not easy. Now, you do have cards like the Gul'draz Assassin, which is only 1 to cast, but at the same time, you want to, you know, you're going to be emptying your hand at the same time. You need to be drawing cards at the same time. So there's a lot of things that need to be in place for you to really effectively use this card.
Yeah, I think 5 is the important number. And I think you want instant or instant speed stuff as much as possible because it's going to be very hard to sort of go off all in the same turn. You're going to need a ton of mana. So let's say you cast Baron Von Count and then it gets back around to your turn. Like you said, you don't want to just move the Doom counter twice and then go.
Yeah.
Because no one's going to allow that, right? So you need to sort of like do nothing past turn. Then at the end of the turn before your turn, you do it, move the Doom counter 3, untap, finish it off, destroy someone. I think being explosive like that is kind of super important. Somebody on Twitter, Alt Color, said that Dash was a really good mechanic.
Oh, dash, yeah. Because if alternate you use, casting cost.
It's an alternate cast cost, but not just that. It moves the creature back to your hand at the end of the turn. So if it has more than one,
yeah, you can just play it.
You
again.
Can play it again. So Vault Breaker was a good one. It's 3 and a red for a 4/2. Whenever it attacks, you can discard a card if you do draw a card, but it has dash for 2 and a red. So you can play it. It doesn't do 5, but it does 2, 3, or 4. And then it goes back to your hand so that you can cast it again. And it can. So if it did 4 for you, then you cast it again and it does 3.
That's pretty smart. You know, it's interesting because red and black aren't necessarily card advantage cards. So this actually helps you draw a card, maybe do some damage at the same time.
Yeah. Warbringer's another one with dash. I thought that was a really smart one. Buyback was a mechanic. Not Complete Weeb on Twitter.
Only
said,
a partial weeb.
Yeah, not complete, just partial. So Lab Rat's Shattering Pulse was another one that this person suggested.
Right. So yeah. You can just always get the spell back.
And the buyback counts as the one of the numbers. Yeah. So you also can cast it more than once to get it. Being able to use a card in your hand and then still have it in your hand to get a number, another number off the doom counter, I think could be really important because it'd be very easy to like destroy one player but have no cards left now because I played a bunch of sort of, let's be honest, bad cards.
Yeah.
And I used them. So now how am I drawing more cards to do it again? Like I need at least 10 cards to destroy two people, right?
Not to mention you're in black and the way that black draws cards is losing life and you're playing Baron Von Count, everyone will want to murder you.
Yeah.
So...
Evoke was another mechanic I thought was really good. I think Shriek Maw
yeah,
is
Shriek
a really
Maw's
good
my favorite. It has 4 out of 5.
And you do technically cast it when you evoke it.
Yep.
So I think, you know, the big numbers, 5 is the big number. You need efficient ways to cast the number 5.
Yeah. You never want it in your casting cost, honestly. You'd rather have it in the power of toughness or even randomly in the flavor text.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. No. Tameo's Journal was one somebody pointed out where on Tameo's Journal, there are different versions of the flavor text.
Oh, right. So each, with a different... No,
yeah, because she's got different journal entries.
Right.
So it'll be like, blah, 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 journal entry 634, but there's one that's 543.
Oh, really?
Or something like that. And so it's now becomes important, like, which version of Tameo's Journal is in
that's
the deck.
That's pretty cool.
But again, I think 5, if you can find enough ways to... sort of move the doom counter from 5 for less than 3 mana. So 1 or 2 mana, I think you're well on your way. Because there's a lot of ways for 4, 3, 2, and 1 to only cost you like 1 mana.
Yeah.
And then I think it's really easy, maybe at 6 mana, to just play 4 things or 5 things.
I mean, having cantrips in this kind of deck, having cards that replace themselves are really important. Being in red and black is just tough because you don't have traditionally much card advantage. So you're going to really want to use every resource at your disposal. And even cards like Oblivion Stone... that are just very good cards on their own, say 3, 4, 5 on it. And at the very least, if things are going awry, you can at least control the board in that way. So I think you have to play a bit more of a control-y deck.
Yeah, I think that's a really smart thing you've said. And I think a lot of the suggestions that people have online for cards in this deck are like cards that only work good with your Doom counter.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're playing a bunch of Gruul Jaws Assassins and, you know, Nirkana Cutthroats, you're just going to get killed. Your cards have to still be good commander cards.
Yeah.
So that's going to be the balancing act, I think, of a deck like this, is making sure that you don't go so far towards, oh, yeah, I'm so clever. All my cards hit 4 numbers or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But they're all just really bad cards. You're going to need cards that are actually good in commander still.
Yeah.
And that's going to be the balance. Maybe you have to give up like, oh, some of my cards only have 2 numbers on them, but they're just really good cards. And
you know, like Swiftfoot Boots, for instance, you need to play that card, even though it only has 2 numbers on it, because you have to protect your commander. It's just way too powerful. I would even play cards like Gonti, Lord of Luxury, so because it gives you card advantage.
It's a value
and it may
card.
Also give you something that your deck desperately wants. If I know that you have extra turn cards in your deck, I'm targeting you immediately, because that's like an instant win if I can get one extra turn, because you're not really able to do that in black and red.
Yeah, that's a good point. And then Dave Innistrad on Twitter pointed out a really good card that will have to be in the deck, which is Strionic Resonator. So when you finally do cast that one, that spell that has a 1 in it, and you get to destroy target player, you can activate Strionic Resonator and destroy 2 target players.
Hey, not bad.
And Strionic Resonator can be your
2
on the scale. So you can actually play it in the turn that you activate it. You know, play Strionic Resonator, play, I don't know, something that with a 1 in it.
And I wonder if the 1 and 4 and M14 count. I don't think it does, but because it says M14 as the
set
piece on it.
I don't think it says like that line. What's that line called? The I don't know, set symbol.
Set
or whatever.
Symbol, yeah. That'd be that'd awesome. Be, that would be amazing, because then M15, M13, M12, they're all amazing
so
cards.
So much better.
Yeah, it's like any card from the core sets.
That's pretty funny.
All right.
Yeah, a pretty cool one, though. I like that commander. I don't think it'll be overpowered. It seems very easy to stop, right?
It's called instant speed removal,
yeah.
A board wipe.
Yeah, exactly. And you can really mess somebody up, because they can go like 5-4, okay, instant speed removal it. And now you need another 5 and another 4. It's just like, that's the
whole... Well, you also have to recast it.
Oh,
yeah.
It's just bad.
It's just like, oh, cool. How is it wasting two of your cards for this weird effect?
It seems super, super glass cannon-y.
Yeah. Look, if it was Grixis, though, I'd build this in an instant, because you just put in every extra turn card you can.
I mean, you've got some red ones, right? Like the Final Fortunes and stuff.
Here's the thing. If you can kill someone with a Final Fortune, that would be amazing.
I mean, you might be able to. At least once somebody's already dead.
Yeah.
Then Final Fortune becomes really good.
There's also Glorious End, which is I think you would want to play good. Cards like that, yeah. For sure.
Oh, Glorious End's really good. All right, let's move on to the next legendary creature we're going to talk about. It's X.
Gonna give it to you.
X, gonna give it to you. Oh, I need to look up X here really quick.
I got X.
X is hard to look up because you put in X and gather
you just get
and you
a
get
thousand
cards,
things.
So.
Yeah, it was also very hard to just look up X in on my computer because I was like, okay, cool. Well, I can't find it here because there's way too many. Oh, you know what? I can find it.
I'm just
going to
go to
unstable.
MythicSpoiler.com.
And then here I got it.
Oh, you got it.
Yeah. X.
Perfect.
Good card.
Okay.
Blue and a black. It's like baby send triplets.
Yeah.
It's a 2/2 legendary creature human spy. This is going to be a lot of text here, right? As long as X is in X's owner's opponent's hand, X's owner may cast X and activate X's abilities. That opponent can't cast X and plays with his or her hand revealed. Okay, let's just talk about that real fast.
Once you get X into somebody's hand, like let's say I'm playing X and there's an ability that you activate and it puts X into Jimmy's hand.
Oh.
So Jimmy now has X in his hand, but it's mine. I'm the owner. He can't cast it. He has to play with his hand revealed. And I get to activate X's ability still, even though he's not on the battlefield. He's in Jimmy's hand.
And you can cast it from their hand.
Yeah, well, let's read X's second two abilities.
So X's two abilities are for a blue and a black and tapping X, put X into target opponent's hand. So that's how you get X into someone's hand. It needs to be on the battlefield without summoning sickness. And it taps for the same casting cost and throws itself into someone's hand. For 3, a blue and a black, you may play a card in the same hand as X without paying its mana cost. That's very powerful. So 5 mana get to play a card.
Yeah, and you get to play any card in their hand. It doesn't matter how much the casting cost of that card is.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a lot like Send Triplets. Is Send Triplets better? It's worse. It gives you more access to their hand as far as but you have to cast those cards for their regular mana cost.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if they had like 3 things and they were low casting costs, like if you had a Sensei's Divining Top, I don't know why it'd still be in your hand. if you had a couple of artifacts, I could just cast them.
Yeah.
You know, or if I had the right mana, I could cast 2 or 3 things where you need a lot of mana to do that with X. But at the same time, X can cast your
Ulamog.
You know, your 7-drop, 8-drop, 9-drop spell for 5 mana. Which Send Triplets cannot do.
Yeah, I think X is better because it gives you a little more flexibility, but at the same time, Send Triplets does give you more colors. So, but having to be able to make mana of other colors is definitely one of the big downsides of a Send Triplets deck.
Yeah, although because they changed rule number 4 recently, or not recently, a while ago now.
It gets a little easier.
But
you can't do it with your lands, which is a bummer.
X is a 2-drop, whereas Send Triplets is way more expensive, so you can just get X online and active a lot earlier.
By turn 3, easily.
Plus, that person is playing with their hand revealed, not just you, to the entire table. Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of politics here, right? Where it's like, look, X is in his hand. Look at what that person has. I'm going to cast that Wrath of God now, which is, by the way, great because X is still in their hand. It won't get removed.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
But you can be like, hey, do you need something to get Path to Exile? That 100% will do that for you. Or like, oh, look, let me put this on the battlefield because obviously it's going to hurt this person that's way on the front. There's a lot of different ways you could play it.
I think the first card that came to mind for me was Rings of Brighthearth, which is going to allow you to copy X's ability when you resolve it and play 2 spells for 5 mana, although Rings cost some mana. So it's 7 mana total, I guess. But that ramps it up to such a degree where like 2 spells out of somebody's hand for 7 mana, like any 2 spells.
That's absurd.
Yeah, that changes it into like... Pretty explosive.
The big thing about X is that because you can get them into someone's hand by turn 3, then that person has no way that they can unload the rest of their hand. So they're probably holding the 7 or 8 drops if they happen to have them or draw them. And also you get to be very strategic with who you choose. Like if someone's playing Arachdos, Lord of Riot's deck, X is flopping into that hand faster than, well, it's as fast as possible. The only difference is that, you know, you want to be careful if someone might be able to discard X or whatever. But in general, I think you should always be stealing stuff with this deck, and I would make that the theme of the deck. So
even
I would,
discarding things is not that bad, because that's a zone change, and yeah, you can move it back to your command zone, and it's a 2-drop, so X still doesn't cost that much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, X seems pretty powerful and annoying to play against, right? If you're the player picked, like, all of a sudden.
Well, you really don't want to be the player picked, because normally cards like the one you brought up shows everyone's hand, and everyone can see everything, but if just one player's hand is revealed, that is really bad for that player and really good for everyone else.
I'd say the card that most people talked about in sort of concert with X is a card called Telepathy, and it's 1 blue mana for an enchantment, and it just says your opponents play with their hands revealed. So your information is still hidden, but all your opponents have their hands revealed. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a card Craig has played a few times, and it really does screw up the game in a weird way, because when all information's known, it's really hard. It can be tough to politic. Everybody knows what you could do, what you can do.
They're going
to
see every card you draw.
You don't have anything but there's one player sitting there, and nobody knows what they have, and it's you.
Which is you, yeah.
Yeah, and it also, I mean, obviously this is good because it allows you to play it on turn one, and then you know what hand to put X into.
Yeah, that's definitely a big thing, is finding the best target for X. There's also Xur's Weirding. I know you like this card a lot. it is players play with their hands revealed, and if a player would draw a card, he or she reveals it instead. Then any other player may pay 2 life. If a player does, put that card into its owner's graveyard. Otherwise, that player draws a card. So it's interesting because it's a little bit against X, because if someone's like, oh, I don't want you to have this card in their hand, but it also just takes that card away from someone that otherwise would have it. So it's a little bit of control, and you still get to choose someone with X.
I mean, you can really mess up one player that way too, by just denying them cards and then casting their cards for yourself, and all of a sudden they're getting eaten from sort of both ends, right?
Yeah.
Like, you're not drawing anything new, but he's also using my cards, and now all of a sudden I just only... Yeah, that could be pretty tough.
Pretty brutal.
Yeah. Training Grounds, a card we've been talking about more and more often. This was one that came to mind. It reduces the activated abilities by 2. It cannot reduce it below 1. But this would make X only cost 1 blue and a black. And all of a sudden, you could maybe be casting 2-3 spells out of people's hands.
Right.
I mean, when you're casting 3 spells out of someone's hands, think about that. You're removing cards from their hand. They're literally losing the cards, and you're gaining the cards. So it's like a 2-for-1 every time you do it, right? It's almost like you cast a card that also said, and your opponent discards a card, right? I mean, it is exactly that. So it's super, super powerful to just be able to do that, you know, a couple of times, because you can really shut somebody out of the game. I mean, if you have 7 cards, I activate X 3 times, you have 4 cards.
Yeah, and they're all on your side of the battlefield. Your hand's decimated.
Yeah, I just took your best cards,
3 cards, yeah.
And I got them. So it's just, that's very powerful.
Yeah, normally we say, like, things that only target one person are not that strong. But in this case, because you're gaining a card from it whenever you cast it with X, it's pretty good. I would play a card like Fairy Artisans in this deck, which is from the new Commander set. It's 3 blue for a 2/2. It says, whenever a non-token creature enters the battlefield under an opponent's control, create a token that's a copy of that creature, except it's an artifact in addition to its other types, and then you exile all other tokens created with Fairy Artisans. So it's like a little clone machine. It sits there, and it's like, oh, you're going to cast something? Great. Well, I'm going to make a copy of it, a little token copy. If you have X in someone's hand, you get to really choose what that becomes.
Here's an interesting card that I never thought I would want to play in Commander. This was suggested by Justin Walker at Ninjustin79.
Ninjustin.
What a great Twitter name, Ninjustin. It's called Head Games. It's 3 black-black, and it's a sorcery. It says, target opponent puts the cards from his or her hand on top of his or her library. Then you search that player's library for that many cards. The player puts those cards into his or her hand, then shuffles his or her library.
Wow.
Obviously, this can be used to, like, mess up one player, just give them all lands or something. But what you can do is do this before you put X in their hand, put awesome cards in there that you know you want to activate X with. It's sort of like tutoring a perfect hand for yourself.
For yourself, yeah. Boy, that's going to really paint this target on your back. Actually,
you're going to need a lot of manas to do it. You might even be able to make the deal with somebody, though. Like, hey, listen, I'm going to do this, but after I do it, I can only activate X one time.
Yeah, what else do you want in
your
hands?
What do you want in your hand for when your turn comes around? Yeah. And now all of a sudden, rather than being your enemy, I'm being awesome to you because I'm tutoring something.
Yeah,
you
take a look at their hand and go, ooh, I'm so sorry. How about a new one?
Yeah.
You just have to make sure that you don't put X into their hand before this happens. Cast it, yeah.
Wait, that won't work.
Why isn't this card played more in EDH? It's
because it just
great.
Messes up one player.
Yeah, but if it's like a great combo stopper, I feel like.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Or if someone's like always sandbagging, like me.
Maybe it. See, I think it's just too expensive for like competitive EDH, and it's just too mean for not competitive EDH.
That's a good point.
So
yeah.
That's probably it's just in a weird in between area.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What else you got?
I also have bribery.
Yeah.
I think anything that can steal cards. If you're going to start doing it, you may as well just do it everywhere. You just make it the theme of your deck. There's also Glasses of Urza, which is not a cheap card, unfortunately, but it's a little bit better in terms of the... Actually, no, Glasses of Urza is very cheap. What am I talking about?
Yeah, as far as like the casting cost or the money? Both.
Both, yeah, both, yeah. Because yeah. You can cast it for one, and you just pay one, you just tap it to look at target player's hand. So it's a little bit better if telepathy is something that your playgroup hates. I would run something like the Glasses of Urza.
It might be an effect you want more than one of anyway, so I can look at your hand, mm-hmm. then look at the next person's hand, know where I'm going to want to put X,
yeah.
And it's like, well, I didn't drop telepathy... I have now two chances to draw something like it with Glasses of Urza.
Yeah, it's super cheap to use.
Yeah. It's
and you have some hidden information.
That's another Craig card I've had him play against me before. You're like, you're going to wait, what?
Wait, okay, fine. Okay, you can look. Yeah. You're using the card for that? All right,
it actually annoys me because I can't, like, it's way harder for me to be like, I don't have a removal spell. Because Craig will be like, he does. I saw it. Dang it. DJ at Jumbo Commander, which is another YouTube channel we've talked
DJ.
About a few times. You should check them out if you haven't already. He suggested... Memory Lapse and Remand. So one's a counter spell that puts the card back into their hand, and Remand is a bounce spell that puts it back into their hand.
Right.
Bounce spells seem really good with X, right? Because it's like, oh, you cast the thing that I want to cast. I'll bounce it back to your hand and now cast it myself. So I would think even like unsummons and things would be pretty strong in the deck. I would even think about like boomerangs and stuff like that.
Boomerang? Yeah, I guess you could play, you know... the buyback capsize as well.
Capsize,
deck, yeah.
Capsize is just great in general.
Because I think you want to definitely pump out as much mana as you can in blue and black.
That way, when I put X into your hand, because if I put X into your hand, your first thing is I better cast my best thing before he activates
it, right? And come at you with everything I have.
Yeah, but if I'm going to be like, well, I'm going to unsummon the thing you cast for one mana, and then I'm going to use X's ability to cast it myself. So it doesn't even matter what you cast. I'm still going to get your best thing because I'll just bounce it back to your hand if not.
Yeah,
so
true.
I thought that was pretty smart. Richard Coughlin, who is at an Anrek, I don't know, A-N-R-A-Q-E, suggested Master of the Feast. It's one black for a 5/5 with flying. So, you know, 3-mana 5/5 flyer, there's going to be a downside. In this case, I think you can make it into an upside. It says, at the beginning of your upkeep, each opponent draws a card. So normally that's bad.
Right.
I don't want my opponents drawing cards that I'm not. But if I have X in somebody's hand, then I'm kind of drawing cards too, so...
Not so bad.
I might as well have a 5/5 flyer.
Yeah, it's like the opponent feels good about it, but they also don't like it as much.
I mean, whatever the best card is they draw, you're just going to use it. But
yeah.
They get the second best one.
It's
maybe.
Better. It's better with telepathy. I think the big thing is the speed at which you can get X into someone's hand. Because if you want to cast X out of their hand, you have to play it for blue and the black. If it doesn't have haste, you have to wait a turn to put it in someone else's hand. So.
But that's still turn three. It's going into somebody's hand.
Turn three for sure. I'm talking about if it's in someone's hand and you've emptied them out. Like
oh,
it takes
right,
you
right.
a little bit of time.
That's
to
why
get
I think
it.
You want Masters of the Feast and stuff because it's kind of hard to move it around once it's in somebody's hand. So
yeah.
You want cards that are like, I want to make sure that person either doesn't run dry.
Yeah.
Or I'm killing them first so that I can get X back in my command zone. And
yeah.
Then,
I was gonna say actually, there's probably only one person you really want in it to be in their hand and when you're playing X. The other two players or three players, like they may not fit your game plan as much.
This is interesting. I could be wrong about this.
Mm-hmm.
Oh God, here we're gonna get into some rules stuff. So if I'm wrong, that's fine.
No, it's not
because I'm not. I'm under the assumption you can't activate X's first ability from somebody's hand because you can't tap him because he's in somebody's hand, right?
Yes, you cannot do that. You can only do it if it's relevant to being on the battlefield. So you can't do his first ability in someone's hand.
So once he's in your hand, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
I have difficulty getting him out of your hand.
Yeah.
I'm sort of stuck with you. So that might mean in my deck, I need to play some Thought Seizes. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, some you can cards, cast X from their hand. It's just going to take you a turn. You can,
oh, it costs 5 mana to cast him from their hand?
No, I think you can actually play... Hold on. We'll have to go through this again because X has so much text on it. Yeah. Okay. As long as X is in X's owner's opponent's hand, X's owner may cast X and activate X's abilities.
Okay, so you can always cast it down and then you still have summoning sickness.
You still have to wait to
do you need 1,000-year elixir for sure.
For sure.
Well, so that gives haste to X's ability so that when you do that, you can immediately activate it. Because, man, you don't want X sitting there vulnerable. People are going to definitely destroy it if they can. Although he's a 2-drop, so it's only going to cost 4.
Well, that's the thing is, do you actually get him to, because it is... Oh, you don't control the creature, though, do you, when you cast it again? Do you?
Yeah, you cast it. It says you're casting it, so it goes onto your side of the
battlefield.
Oh, it
goes onto your side of the battlefield? Okay.
Yeah, all that stuff is yours.
Right, right, right. Okay, so yeah, you do want haste granters like that in that case.
But blue and black, it's hard to get a lot of haste. Right, right. You know, 1,000-year elixir is a really good one.
Yep.
Illusionist Bracers was another one I thought of.
Mm-hmm.
Although that doesn't really work, because you can't be equipped with that in somebody's hand. Never mind, Illusionist Bracers is bad.
Bad.
Yeah, bad.
You put X into multiple people's hands.
That won't work.
The thing, though. Could you... I'm trying to think if there's a way to instant speed copy X and then put it into someone's hand.
The problem is the copy, once it goes into the hand, wouldn't be... I thought of Sakashima, right? Because Sakashima is a good way. But the problem is once you put Sakashima into somebody's hand,
it just becomes Sakashima.
So they just have a Sakashima now. That's not...
That's not what you want.
Yeah, that's...
I was thinking, you could definitely have a legendary X on the battlefield before having it somewhere else. You know,
right,
you could
but
have
two X doesn't do anything by itself on the battlefield. So
it's the nice 2-2 for two.
I think this deck seems to want to be control-y in general, right? So you're going to want to rely on your opponents for the win conditions, and your deck is mostly just ramp and control stuff.
Because
your card draw is X. It's drawing cards just out of other people's hands. So really, I think that's all you want. Just every piece of ramp you can find and then stuff that's going to counter anything that's problematic to you.
Yeah, being able to control the situation is going to be the best after you have X out, because everyone's for sure going to want to come at you. And
they don't want you stealing cards out of their hand.
Yeah, well, exactly. Also, not just that, but if you take the best cards that are not in your color pie and people are like, oh, this is bad, we need to stop this immediately, then X is truly going to give it to you.
It's what I've noticed when playing against Send Triplets in general, and Craig recently put together a Send Triplets deck, and I feel bad, but my automatic inclination, and everyone else's at the table, is to go after the Send Triplets deck.
Right.
Because they, at any moment, could just look towards you and be like, I'm just playing a bunch of stuff out of your hand. You won't have those cards anymore. And that threat isn't necessarily the most powerful threat at the table, but it's the least fun. So you always are like, nope, I don't want that to happen, in which case I'm going at that person. So I think X would have that kind of response from the table.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on to the Monster Masher. That's what we should have sang.
Monster Mash?
Yeah.
We do
the Monster Mash.
The Monster Mash.
All right. So we sort of sang it, so I'm happy now.
It is Griselda. Gross name. Monster Masher. And this card is pretty interesting as well.
I actually got this in a draft, and it was unbelievable.
Did you use it?
Oh, yeah. It was unbeatable.
Wait, with your Urza deck?
No, it was a different deck. We actually drafted twice.
Oh, my goodness. That's amazing. Because I'm sure... Okay, so it's a 3 black and a red legendary creature zombie villain. It's a 4/4. Combined, enchanted, and equipped creatures you control have menace. So a combined card would be an unstable.
Augment and a host. This will also count as combined when she does her thing.
Yeah. And enchanted as well. So enchantment auras, equipped. So if you have any sort of equipment on it, gives them menace. So that's just an interesting sided add bonus. Now,
well, they're two creatures, kind of. So they get, combined with
that makes
so
sense.
You need two things to block it, I guess.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. For 3 black and a red, her casting costs, you tap Griselda to put 2 creature cards from graveyards onto the battlefield combined into 1 creature under your control. So this new monster mash of a creature, its power is equal to the total power, its toughness is equal to the total toughness, and it has their names, mana cost, types, text boxes, etc.
It has everything combined. You get the enter the battlefields effects because they're coming from graveyards onto the battlefield. It says from graveyards.
Yeah.
That's from any graveyard. So I can be like, oh, you have an Oracle of Moldiah over there, and I have an Eternal Witness. I'm going to put them together. That's going to make a 4/3, and when it enters the battlefield, I get to get something out of my graveyard, and it will do what Oracle of Moldiah does, which is, reveal the top card of your library, play an extra land, all that stuff. It's incredibly powerful because it also doesn't have the text when it dies, you exile those
things. Yeah, they just go right back to the graveyard, so you can keep doing it.
So you just go, oh, they died. I'll do it again then.
Yeah.
Because they're still in the graveyard.
A true monster mash.
It's pretty crazy.
It does cost a lot, 5 mana to do, but at the same time.
You have to tap Griselda.
I mean, look, by turn 4, you can cast in Damnation.
Yeah.
By turn 5, you're casting Griselda. By turn 6, hey, you're just off to the races. It's like living death, but you get to choose, and the creatures become one.
It's pretty crazy, and the amount of combinations you could have...
Out of control.
So a lot of people mentioned that Necrotic Ooze combos just generally work with Griselda.
Mm-hmm.
Hamilton Gensheimer, at Hammy Sand Wizard on Twitter, suggested Tree of Perdition and Cinderhaze Wretch. This is a Necrotic Ooze combo, and Cinderhaze lets you untap the creature by putting a negative one counter on it, so with Tree of Perdition, you just kind of whittle people down.
Right.
It's... Okay, I'm not going to talk about a bunch of Necrotic Ooze combos because those are sort of established. And that's a reason that I think Griselda might be a good deck to build right now because you can find all that information.
Yeah, there was a ton out there when I looked at Necrotic Ooze combos. There are many, many ways to go infinite. The big thing is, though, Griselda chooses anyone's graveyard. So it makes your board wipes that much better. It makes your discard that much better. And it's black and red. I played in the Heb the Worthy deck, which is all about making everyone discard cards. And it was very effective. If I could have Griselda in that deck instead, holy moly. Then you're actually using their graveyards as fuel. So you want to, I think.
Yeah, mass discard.
Mass discard, yeah.
And mass again, mill will work. You're in black.
This is very powerful. People are going to already be targeting you as soon as you make your first monster mash. I think you play the Wheel of Fortunes in here, your Reforge of the Souls, because you want to get rid of your own hand as well.
You just want to fill graveyards, get more cards. I think also you want the Buried Alives and the Entombs, so those allow you to search your own library and put things specifically into the graveyard, because you can put creatures in there, obviously, that you can use to mash together with other creatures.
One card I liked was Heretic's Punishment. It's 4 and a red for an enchantment. And for 3 and a red, you choose target creature or player, then put the top 3 cards of your library into your graveyard. Heretic's Punishment deals damage to that creature or player equal to the highest converted mana cost among those cards. So it functions as removal to get another card into the graveyard, potentially, and it also gets your cards into the graveyard. So
I like it.
If you have a card that you want to get rid of, hopefully, you know, you play something like a Scroll Rack. You can definitely manipulate the top of your deck a little bit, nail a creature, put it in the graveyard, and then Griselda comes out and makes it into something else.
That's pretty sweet. One I had that somebody on Twitter suggested, a lot of people did, but the first one I saw was Jeff Marshall at JRM5778.
Oh, this
was
a good one.
Phage the Untouchable and Platinum Angel. So Phage is kind of a famous creature that if you don't cast Phage from your hand, you lose the game if it enters the battlefield under your control. But if Phage touches anybody, combat damage to anybody, they immediately lose the game, right?
Yeah.
So there's Phage decks out there where people like... They have like Torpor Orbs and things so that they can play Phage.
Without,
because it's coming from your command zone that actually isn't from your hand, so it will normally kill you, so you have to come up. Phage is very powerful if you can get Phage on the battlefield somehow because her casting cost is pretty, it's pretty oppressive.
Three black, 7 mana total.
And 4 specifically black.
Yeah.
So people were saying if you monster mash that together with Platinum Angel, which is a 4/4 flyer, that costs 7, but it says you can't lose the game and your opponents can't win the game. So if you mash it with Phage, all of a sudden the Phage enter the battlefield, you lose if you didn't cast it from your hand thing, gets countered by Platinum Angel's text, and now it's got flying.
It's an 8/8.
And it's an 8/8, and so when I swing at somebody, if they can't block it, they just die.
Yeah, the damage doesn't even matter at that point. But whenever Phage deals combat damage to a creature, it also just destroys a creature.
Yeah.
So it has like old school death touch.
And this, I think this is going to be a deck because, like you said, you're going to want wheel effects, self-mill, dredge, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to run anger. You're going to run some haste enablers. I believe this deck wants a lot of just generally useful things on creatures just so that if at any moment you're like, oh, I see an opportunity and what I need a lot of damage and I need haste.
Right.
Oh, well, I'm going to grab this from there and I'm going to grab a haste creature. Oh, in this case, I need to, I need something that gives me life, so I'm going to grab something with lifelink and something blah, blah, blah.
Wow, I didn't think about it. The utility is huge.
Yeah.
Oh, did that happen in Limited a lot for you?
Well, in Limited, I was just taking whatever because it didn't matter, right? I was just like, oh, I'll put these two things together. Well, it gives menace, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in Limited, if you have a Death Toucher and something, you put them together, the biggest thing you can find with the Death Toucher, now you attack. If they don't block, they take a ton of damage. If they do block, they have to block with two creatures. They lose them both, then you Griselda again back together.
Right, because you get more creatures off it. Wow, yeah. That spirals out of control.
It's ridiculous.
Wow.
So.
Another combo that I saw was Skitherix, which is one of Craig's favorite cards. Gosh. It's a 4/4 flying infect creature, and then you can regenerate or give it haste. But then you just combine it with something like Scourge of the Throne.
Boom.
It's a dragon that will dethrone and immediately kill someone.
And get another combat and kill somebody
else. And then kill
else.
Them. Yeah, yeah. Well, it does 5 infect, and then you get a combat, so you can swing at them again because it's going to be a 5/5.
No, wouldn't it do 10? Because you...
Oh, you're right.
You
combine
it
them.
With Skithrix.
Right,
you
even better.
Yeah, you put the 1/1 counter on it because it got dethroned. It's now 10. Kill somebody. Untap.
And then
extra
kill
combat steps.
Yeah.
Kill somebody else.
I keep forgetting about the combined power and toughness. Yeah. I'm just like, oh, wouldn't it be cool to attack with this card twice? Yes.
Yeah,
yes, it would
be. Kill 2 people.
Yeah.
Goblin Sharpshooter and Death Touch creature is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Because unlike Necrotic Ooze only gets the activated abilities of 2 things. But because Griselda gets the text box, now you get the tap ability from Goblin Sharpshooter and Death Touch, which isn't something Necrotic Ooze would normally get off something.
Right.
And now I can just mow down the entire... Sorry, Goblin Sharpshooter is a Tim. It deals 1 damage to a target creature or player. But every time a creature dies... It untaps. So if he has Death Touch, you just kill everything on the board. Ping that, it dies, untap. Ping the other thing, it dies, untap, blah,
yeah.
blah, blah.
Yeah. There's Cairn Wanderer, which is a card from Lorwyn. It's 4 in the black for a 4/4. It's a changeling, but it also says, as long as a creature card with flying is in the graveyard, Cairn Wanderer has flying. The same is true for Fear, First Strike, Double Strike, Death Touch, Haste, Lamb Walk, Lifelink, Protection, Reach, Trample, Shroud, and Vigilance.
Oh, yeah. So you just get everything from
everything. It's just a big monster.
That's awesome because you combine that with basically anything.
Anything, yeah. And you have
and
a 4/4.
And anything gets everything, basically.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's sweet. I also think, like, you're just going to have, like, oh, you've got this in your graveyard. I'm just going to take that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I think this could be a really fun deck because on the fly, you can come up with a bunch of stuff. One other one that I had.
Yeah, that's really exciting. Just, like, in the game, like, hey, everyone, just can you put your graveyards closer to me so I can just always be looking through them, or put your creatures on top, please?
Yeah, you're MacGyvering it together. It's like, oh, I really wish I had, you know, I could blah, blah, blah. Oh, I'll put these two together, and that'll solve my problem. The last one I'm going to talk about is Sire of
Insanity. I believe Gavin Verhey designed this card.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
He is just, thank you. So it is 4, a red and a black for a 6/4 creature demon. Again, doesn't matter as much because of Griselda. You're gonna probably combine it. It says, at the beginning of each end step, each player discards his or her hand.
Woo!
If you have Griselda active and you play Sire of Insanity and everybody discards their hand, and now I have access to all of your graveyards.
Yeah.
But you guys don't have anything in your hands, and hey, neither do I, but not the worst.
Not the worst.
I'd be feeling in a pretty good position.
Yeah, the fact that everyone has to discard their hand and most decks don't have ways to interact with it. I feel like very few decks have reanimate effects in them unless they're trying to specifically do that.
And certainly they don't probably have them, like, not in their hands, right?
Right.
Like, most of your reanimation effects are going to be things that you're going to need to cast. So unless you have Unburial Rites or something.
Yeah, there's,
even then, you're going to get 1 creature back. Like, what? That's not going to be that great.
That's true. I mean, here's the thing. You can really mess with graveyard shenanigans in this deck. Body Snatcher, it's a 2/2/2. 2/2. When it enters the battlefield, exile it unless you discard a creature card. Hey. And when Body Snatcher dies, exile Body Snatcher and return target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield. So you're getting tons of value.
Just, yeah.
And you can recycle the Body Snatcher by always bringing it back. You have stuff
it gets exiled when it dies.
Oh, right.
So
But still. And you have cards like Corpse Connoisseur, which is, you know, being able to find
kinda
the card.
Entombing,
yeah. So you want those kinds of effects for sure. And then also, because Griselda says enchanted creatures get menace, that gives you a lot of reason to play Animate Dead, Necromancy, Diabolic Servitude, all these enchantments that get a card out of your graveyard onto the battlefield. So even if Griselda's not, you know, you don't have enough mana to use Griselda, you can still use effects like this to get the menace part of it and, you know, just bring cards back with enchantment auras. Enchantment auras get a little bit of tiny upside in this deck.
Thousand Year Elixir, another one that might be want to be in this deck.
You always want to use Thousand. That card it's just good.
It's a really good card, as it turns out.
I didn't realize this, but Scourge of the Throne is now not a cheap card anymore.
Oh, no, it's expensive now.
It got up there.
Yeah. Well, because it turns out it's really good.
It kind of ends games, honestly.
All right, so that's as deep as we're going to go on any of these new legends. It's time for 2 of the listeners. What cool ideas, cards, or synergies do you have for these 3 commanders that we didn't mention that you thought of?
Mm-hmm.
It'll be nice for you to put them in the comments specifically on YouTube because I think, like I said, there's not a great resource at the moment to sort of everybody pool their ideas for. I mean, unless somebody's just making their own Reddit post or something, but this could be a good place for people to look for ideas.
Yeah.
At least for the next few weeks.
Also tweeting at us. We'll be having conversations. JF Wong, Josh Lee Kwai, Commandcast, all that good stuff.
I also wanted to ask, how does everybody feel about, because we didn't ask this before,
right.
How do you feel about the fact that silver border cards are legal in Commander until January 15th? Do you like it? Do you not like it?
Have you even played with it yet? That's what I want to know. I mean, yeah. I know some people are saying,
how much has it actually affected you?
Yeah. Because I could see it being like, oh, it was fun and it was wacky, and then we just played regular Commander. Or I could see people going, you know what, this was actually a really fun and good addition. But I don't honestly see it being the case.
I mean, how do you feel about it so far?
So far, I haven't. I mean, all I've done is kind of brew some decks randomly and been like, hey, this would be fun to do. I don't know if it would fly. I don't know if I want to spend money on a deck and build a deck and use my sleeves and do all that process. Because building a deck...
That can take a couple of days, really. I mean, yeah. we build decks for game nights, and I'm always surprised. I'm like, man, that's like a full day's work to build and assemble the deck, find the cards, you know, whittle it down, then actually go and order the ones I don't have and all that stuff, like you said. Yeah, and do I want to do that if on January 16th, all of a sudden, okay, well, I'm not allowed to play that deck anymore. I will say, like, not to start a grassroots movement, but I would generally be in favor of the statement from the rules committee or somebody that just said, yep, legendary creature from Unstable, all legal as your commander and commander, except Spike. If they just made that statement, it's simple. It's one sentence.
Mm-hmm.
They could sort of add it to the bottom of the ban list and... I think that would be fine, and I think it would actually be ultimately good for the format. There is some cool stuff here.
Yeah, and here's the thing. It's not a competitive format. It's not supposed to be. If you want to play competitive EDH, there are ways to do it, and trust me, these cards are not legal in that format. But
I mean, competitive EDH and Laboratory Maniacs or other people that are into competitive CEDH, as they call it, I'd love to hear from you guys. I don't think that there's a legendary creature outside of Spike.
That's a big deal.
That would be tier one. It doesn't appear, at least obviously to me, that any of the other ones would be in competition with the Xurs and and all the rest of them.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing too. I mean, out of the silver bordered commanders that are legal, none of them really break the game that hard outside of Spike again.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Interesting question. Yeah, anxious to hear what everybody thinks. Okay. If you do want to order any of these cards and build these decks... I'll tell you what, if you ever run into a set of GP and you pull out like a Griselda deck and you're like, I'd like to play my, I'll be like, yep, 100%.
Yeah.
I mean, as long as that's the only silver bordered card, I'm not in for the all silver bordered cards are all.
You are allowed to have Ashnod's coupon in your deck.
No, I don't want to have to go get anybody a drink.
Well, then you have to listen to what they tell you to do.
No, that card's annoying.
Yeah.
You just had a really good experience using it.
Yeah, it's true.
But use it against you, you'd be like, no, screw that card.
Well, that's the thing, is like, how hard could you leverage someone getting you a drink? Turns out you can leverage it quite a bit. No one wants to get up and get you a drink.
Well, if you want to order any of these legendary creatures or Ashnod's coupon, if you want to try it out in your playgroup, go to cardkingdom.com/commandzone. If you use that affiliate link, again, you'll be supporting Game Nights and all of our content and helping it to keep flow.
Maybe Cheaty Face will be okay.
I think there's a lot of silver border cards that would be okay, honestly, but the problem is there's just, you'd have to list them individually, and that's just too much of an
it's a nightmare.
Yeah.
I don't know how you make a separate, you'd have to make a separate specific ban list.
And then people would be like, wait a minute, is that legal? Check it every time. No, just all the unstable legendary creatures except for Spike, and they have to be your commander, and that's it.
I mean, you can go a little further back. I think they had some specific bans by other legendary creatures, but there aren't that many, actually.
Yeah, that's why. Just don't even unglue it, unhinged. There's not enough of those cards.
And they weren't really... I don't already think banned. They were planning for it, either. Yeah. Some of them are. Like, Johnny, I think, is banned.
It's just not worth the upheaval, I think, to sort of go that deep.
So make sure you go to cardkingdom.com/commandzone if you want to buy any of those cards. Support the show. Also, you can support the show by buying Ultra Pro products. It's as easy as that. They have tons of stuff, obviously, for Iconic Matters. You can get an Earl of Squirrel playmat. Pretty sweet. You can get all sorts of unhinged stuff as well as just regular
unstable.
Sorry, you can get all sorts of unstable stuff as well as stuff from Hour of Devastation, Emelkut, Ixalan.
Rivals of Ixalan coming up.
So tons of product as always. And if you buy the Wayne England playmat or deck box or sleeves with his original art for Very Cryptic Command, all of the proceeds go towards the foundation that his family chose, the British Heart Foundation. Rest in peace, Wayne England. Thank you, Ultra Pro, for being awesome and always setting the standard in the industry.
All right, now it's time for the end step where we talk about something cool outside the world of Magic. I have something.
Oh, good. I can't say my thing yet.
Yeah, your thing we got to hold for a little while, but it's awesome. Okay, teased enough. I finished a book recently. It is by Brandon Sanderson, who we've talked about on the show before, who's also a big Magic player. It's called Oathbringer. It's the third in a series. And I just finished it, enjoyed it quite a bit. So if you haven't read the Way of Kings series...
How big is the book?
It's pretty big. I don't know. I read books digitally now, so I have no idea.
you used to be able to gauge by the thickness.
Yeah, it took a couple of weeks, so it's pretty big.
Oh, wow.
And I read fast. So it's a cool book. It's a fantasy novel. I do tend to like fantasy novels. So I would recommend picking that up, or at least the first book in the series. Gosh, what's it called? I forget now.
Brandon Sanderson, though, being a magic fan, probably has some magic stuff in there that you identify with, right? Or some like similarities in different ways.
He definitely builds his magic systems. And by that, I mean the way that magic works in his universe in a way that's very much like a game designer. So it makes sense. The rules are consistent. You know, sometimes you'll read a book and it just seems like the character can just kind of do whatever they feel like. There's not really any rules or checks and balances on their power, but not in Brandon Sanderson's worlds. They're very clearly described. This is what they can do. This is how it works. And so when they get into situations and they have to use their abilities to sort of solve problems or do things, it's fulfilling, it's satisfying, it doesn't feel like they cheated. It's like, oh, they can do that, I know the rules of that. Or they can't, they can't use that, we know because of the rules that you set up.
That's cool.
One other thing I really liked and I wanted to throw out there is I'm pretty sure Brandon Sanderson is a fan of my favorite history podcast, Hardcore History,
because
there's a bunch of references in the book that I caught.
Wait,
that
really?
I was like...
Maybe he was listening to it at the same time he was writing it.
I think he was. There's a certain series in Hardcore History that's called The Wrath of the Khans, and it's about Genghis Khan and the Mongols. And he makes a bunch of... There's probably 7 or 8 off the top of my head I can think of. He even names one of the characters, Jochi, which is one of the names of the famous Khan. And there's a bunch of other references to specific things mentioned in Hardcore History. So I did like that quite a bit.
Brandon, maybe you're also a fan of Game Nights.
I would love to get Brandon on Game Night sometime. That'd be sweet.
Yeah.
He's probably busy on a book tour right now. All right, make sure to check out our sister podcast, The Masters of Modern, Alex Kessler and Ben Bateman. They talk about the modern format, all things competitive magic. They just hit 4,000 followers on Twitter.
Hey, congrats, guys.
Congrats,
awesome.
Guys. Always excited to see them grow. So if you're not one of those 4,000 followers, definitely check them out. And where you can find them, on Twitter, at TheMMCast, or right next to us at collected.company.
Our editor for the show is Terry Robertson. He puts all of the videos and the audio versions of the podcast together, which you can watch at youtube.com/TheCommandZonePodcast. So the next time you want to listen to a podcast, but also watch it at the same time and see the cards pop up. And we talked about a lot of cards in this episode. Make sure you head on over to our YouTube channel, subscribe, you hit the little bell, and it'll give you a notification when we also release new videos, which is mostly every Tuesday. And Game Nights once a month. Also, big thanks to Jeffrey Palmer, who does the animations, the 11 card animations on our videos. And a big thanks to Balam Nahara, who did the swamp animation behind us in
studio.
You might
have seen it in the last episode of Game Nights.
Unstable swamp. Still drawn by John Avon, but yeah, beautiful piece of art.
You put all the bugs on my side. I don't know why you did that. Thanks a lot, Balam.
Yeah.
No, awesome work. It's great to have another person.
You got like two bugs popping up over there.
I evidently stink more than Jimmy does.
Yeah, that's just how it goes.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening.
And we'll see you next time.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter at JF Wong and at Josh Lee Kwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.